Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the gentlemen nerds. The gentlemen nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. It's costume season! Halloween is just around the corner, and that means the skillful art of becoming someone or something else will soon be on display. In the nerd culture, the art of wearing a costume and appearing at shows or conventions or gatherings is referred to as cosplay. Now make no mistake, cosplay is costuming and has been going on since man first stood upright. But the term cosplay, a contraction of the words costume and play, has become a year-round amateur and sometimes professional hobby in which participants wear mostly self-made costumes and fashions to represent a specific character. It's not just Halloween, folks, or Mardi Gras, or Carnival anymore. It's year-round. Here to discuss our thoughts on cosplay and our own personal experiences in the hobby are Mark Finn.
Hey, everybody.
Aaron DeArrive.
Hola.
And I am Joseph Otinos, your host and emotional touchstone for this cosplay edition of The Gentlemen Nerds.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey.
Good. I'm fascinated with cosplay, guys. I like Joseph, I grew up sort of loving Halloween. For the candy. What kid doesn't love Halloween for the candy? Mm. But really for the opportunity to dress like some of my favorite characters.
Yeah, man.
I think that's Joseph pointed out in the introduction that, you know, costuming masquerades have been going on as long as humans have had history. And it seems to be something that's sort of endemic to us. I mean, we like dressing up and pretending to be somebody else, probably somebody famous, somebody from myth, from legend, from media now. And I find the whole phenomenon, I'm sure there are many right now postdoctoral theses about cosplay and why it's become so prevalent and why are we seeing it everywhere in the nerd culture, the geek culture. I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? Are you guys, I know Joseph, you are just, I bow to your efforts with cosplay over the years. They are phenomenal. And you're current.
Yes, your current one. You are Mugu God King of the cosplayers.
You do well. I mean, because you commit. You're doing Doctor Strange this year. I'm watching your efforts on Facebook. They look fantastic.
Well, it is a growth for me from, like you said, Halloween and Mardi Gras and Carnival, things that I do love and enjoy. But I want to take a minute before I get into personal stuff and talk about the idea and behind the psychology of the mask or the masking.
Yes.
And not literally the mask, because many cosplay, you're not wearing a mask, a physical mask.
Right, right.
But you are putting on a mask when you dress up like a character and become somebody else.
Absolutely.
The Venetians have this wonderful thing called Carnival, and they brought it here to us, and we enjoy it. We've been enjoying it for decades, centuries almost, to dress up around the season. And it's the season of topsy-turvy, of taking the rich and the poor and flip-flopping those positions, the privileged and the poverty. It's kind of an even playing field, right? When you kind of wipe the slate clean and say, for one day or for one season of 40 days before Lent starts, be anything you want to be. Do what you want to do, as the Rebirth Brass Band would say, to be and to live, right? And in many cases, in order to do that, one has to disguise yourself, because you don't want prominent doctors or lawyers or people of power in the city to be caught, making the beast with two backs, if you know what I mean, and I think you do, out in public with some floozy. You want to disguise yourself. It's all about creating the myth and the disguise. A mask empowers you. A mask hides who you really are and lets you be what you want to be, or what you are inside, but never really able to bring it out. Okay. So the idea behind masking is really exciting to me to see that. And I, not just for myself, for other people. Boy, I love seeing people in costume. I love looking at them and going, why did she choose that? Why did he choose that? What, you know, prompted him to put on that costume and to be that tonight? It is incredibly fascinating. Now, you take that nerd culture that we talked about earlier, all the comic books and movies and TV shows that you're like, oh boy, one day I sure would like to be Jim Gordon or you know, whatever character you want from the Lost in Space, or I don't know, pick anything and go, wow, right. I grew up watching that. Wouldn't that be great to be Voltan from Flash Gordon? You know what? I can do that. I can be that character and walk around with that attitude and that character just living and breathing in me for a night. Oh my God. And then when you're done, you take it off and you hang it in the closet and you're back to normal again. Who doesn't like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. It's the very act of pretending, you know, when you're a kid, you pretend to mm-hmm. cowboys and Indians or, you know, aliens and space rangers or whatever you do. And now it's become more sophisticated. Now you're donning the garb of whatever it is, and you're continuing to pretend. Yeah. Like I said, there's something intrinsic in our species that I think just likes that idea, likes doing that. I mean, who doesn't at some point dream they were someone else? They had somebody else's, whatever, you take your pick, somebody else's wealth, look, power, position, you know, accolades, whatever it is, whatever it is. And this is the taking it to that far extreme of pretending to be somebody in many cases where you could never be. You would never be somebody with superpowers or an actual space ranger or whatever it is.
Right.
It's both a love of the genre and I mean of whatever the particular media IP is, mm-hmm. And it's also the wish fulfillment, the desire to for a few moments, you know, pacing around the strutting around the convention floor or mm-hmm. Wherever you are, the party. Having people take pictures of you and you posing, it's that idea of, for now, for the next hour, I am going to be mm-hmm. Doctor Who.
And it gives not only... Go ahead.
Well, I read a book years ago that was very illuminating for me. At the time, I was studying Elvis and Elvis impersonators. And this book... Nice. The name of which eludes me completely, was about the act of the shaman in primitive culture taking on the robe and the aspect and the garb of whatever entity or animal mm-hmm. They were doing a ceremony for. Mm-hmm. And that ceremonial act of becoming another thing was it was a bend in reality which everybody agreed to, you know, for the purposes of the dance. Mm-hmm. I am the water bison, and mm-hmm. for the purposes of the dance you are the hunters, right? And mm-hmm. and so it was a way of sort of actualizing a reality that you wanted to see take place. Mm-hmm. And so you know, in relating this to Elvis impersonators, which
I was waiting for that.
Elvis impersonators, there were a few of them around when he was alive, but when he died, they multiplied 20-fold. Mm-hmm. Right. And what it was a way of summoning Elvis back to Earth.
Yeah.
It was right. a way of pulling, you know, down from the heavens to commune with us, this person who meant so much to us in our lives. And when I realized that there was a, I hesitate to call it a spiritual component, but when there was a metaphysical component to this, that's when it occurred to me that, you know, and of course, cosplay, you know, a lot of people will tell you that it came out of Japanese culture from the anime. And I think, it, like most things in America and Japan, it was parallel development rather than, yeah. than first they did it, then we did it. Because in the 70s, probably one of the most famous cosplayers of all for us was Wendy Penny, who used to who created ElfQuest, but used to show up at conventions dressed as Red Sonja, complete with chainmail bikini. And you know what? She rocked it too. It looked great.
I've seen the photos.
And that's a good point. It's been around since. I mean, you could say it's anime and it's the Japanese and everything. But yeah, I think we pretty much established that it's just a form of dress up. It's just a form of costuming that's been around forever. So you know, you could try to say, oh, we created cosplay, which no, you didn't. I mean, you may have popularized it in terms of your anime characters, and everyone started wearing giant purple hair and carrying oversized swords. I'll give you that. But the idea behind costuming. It's certainly not indicative to any culture. I think it's mankind.
Right. And absolutely. I mean, Mark just pointed out the whole concept of the shaman putting on the bear skin, you know, and dancing around. And, you know, he's assuming the strength of the bear and that sort of thing. So, no, we are talking about something that is ancient. And there's something in there that touches every human and that goes to something in our psyche. Now, the Japanese, to give credit to popular culture in Japan, the Japanese took the idea of it being a hobby, something you did year round,
right,
and specifically did it to become various anime characters, other popular culture characters. Again, not that had never been done before. People have been doing that. Wendy Peeny, costume parties and Halloween for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
But the term cosplay, as we've come to understand it, that did come from Japanese culture, who were then just watching what everybody else would do. And probably somebody said, you know, I like dressing up. We should dress up all the time.
All the time. I mentioned earlier in the intro that some people are they do this for a living. I know many people, friends of mine, that they show it. All they do is travel from convention to convention to convention. You know, and then some people make a living off of them. There's a photographer that I know that travels to convention to convention to convention and finds the best cosplayers she can, takes photographs of them, and is publishing a book. Of cosplay photos, and all she's doing is it's a skill, don't get me wrong, she's taking the pictures, and they're great pictures, fantastic artists behind the camera, but the subject is not something that she didn't put that together, someone else did, you know, and she's honoring that, she's capturing that moment and giving it a background and putting it all in a book and saying, look at these amazing people and what they do, you know, and the skill involved in the precision of some of these costumes.
Yeah. And the word cosplay actually was there was a Japanese individual, I'm going to mangle the name, but Nobuyuki Takahashi of Studio Hard, while attending the 1984 World Science Fiction Convention, WorldCon in Los Angeles, he was the one that coined the term cosplay. Now, mind you, before that, it had been known as masquerade, but he didn't want the translation of that because masquerade meant, in Japanese, an aristocratic costume.
Sure.
And that's not quite what he was watching, what he was looking at.
Right.
So that's where the term comes from, the word comes from.
I like the blending of the two, costume and play.
Uh-huh.
Because it makes it not so serious, right?
Yeah, no, it's a great. Yeah. I love as words for this sort of stuff go. It's perfect. It's perfect. There's a nice ring to it. It does sound like something fun to do.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, just like you pointed out, Joseph, these things were from the masquerade balls of carnival, dating back to the early, 13th, 14th, 15th centuries. I mean, this is something that happened a lot. This is what I'm fascinated with now. It is really becoming pervasive in the geek community. It has become. I couldn't even conceive of going to some sort of fantasy, science fiction convention and not seeing somebody there who's dressed up in some sort of cosplay. I'd be stunned. I'd be looking around going, am I at the right convention?
What's going on here?
Yeah.
But it's the idea of doing something that you love for yourself is very intoxicating to a costumer or to someone who wants to put this together. It is a project.
Yeah.
You know, you decide the character. You say, this is what I want to do. Personally speaking, for myself, and I know other cosplayers, but I'm just going to speak from my own experience, I start with a sketch. And I sketch it out, and I say, this is kind of what I'm going to go for, and this is what I'm looking for in the character. If I'm creating something from scratch or basing it on an established character, I'll take as many reference photos as I can get my hands on and then sort of plan it out. And then comes the actual figuring. How am I going to make this work? How am I going to do this, A, on a budget, you know, without spending thousands of dollars in doing this craziness? And for me personally, the costumes that I have are like sand paintings, as my wife likes to say. I wear them once or a season. I wear them for a season or once or twice. And then that's it. I don't ever really go back to a costume, no matter how fantastic it is. Now, I do. The only exception so far has been my Time Bandits Evil costume, which is in a box. I've never put it on again, but it's sitting in a box that I could wear when I wanted to. And I haven't yet. And I don't know if I ever will, but I put a lot of work into that. So I'm like, I don't want to just toss it. But many times pieces of my costumes become pieces of other costumes and can be repurposed for other things. But I was going to say that the joy that you get out of it is tenfold when you see the faces of the people who want to walk up to you and take their picture with you.
Yeah.
I know I get thrilled when I see a great Superman or a fantastic Wonder Woman and I want my picture with them. And I'm like, I'm going to get my picture with Superman. Thank you very much.
You know?
And there you are standing next to Superman going, hey, look, it's Supes. And I'm standing next to him. He's my friend. You know, it's thrilling. It's thrilling. Yeah. Oh, my God, there's Snake Plissken. I thought that guy was dead. I want to get my picture with him. You know, it's fun. It's amazingly fun.
No, it is. And again, it also helps because there's a lot of, in our community, there's a lot of creative people. There's a lot of, sort of young up and coming artists. And this is a wonderful way that they have found to express that creativity because, you know, cosplay can be very crude, pieces of cut out cardboard and, you know, crudely painted to look like some kind of robot. Or they can be some of the most elaborate costumes that I have ever seen. Some of the newest ones where they're doing Transformers or the Iron Man armor. And it's just astounding the amount of work and skill and talent that goes into these costumes. Because sometimes they work like people will shoot for a convention and they'll work on that costume all year to get ready for whatever it is, the San Diego Comic-Con, a World Con, Gen Con, whatever the con is.
Dragon Con.
Very
heavy cosplay.
Oh, my God. I went to my first Dragon Con several years ago, and I'm not normally claustrophobic, but when I was crammed into a lobby with hundreds of other bodies pressing in on me, many of them in costume, it was a little overwhelming. I was just holding on to Blythe's hand, and we were trying not to get separated. it's amazing. It's this wonderful masquerade, this menagerie of characters on display that you don't want to stop taking pictures. I took a picture with Lo Pan. And the guy was up on stilts. You know, he was up on stilts, walking around, exactly like Lo Pan. I'm like, oh my God, I have to take a picture with you. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's about to grab my brain out. You know, he's leering at me, and I'm like, that's perfect. He was in character. He looked fantastic.
That's a good point about the character.
Yeah.
You say costume play, right? Put them together, cosplay. You are playing the costume, and a lot of people really, myself included, enjoy that aspect of the pretend more than just I'm putting on the costume on and hi, I'm Joseph and I'm dressed like Loki. You have to be that character, and people expect it. If they walk up to you and they want to say they call you by your character name, they don't know your name, they go, hey Loki, or collector or whatever, they come up to talk to you. They want to talk to the character. They don't want to talk to hi, how are you? You know, they don't want that guy. Yeah. They want the character. So some of that is so joyous to me and allows people who may not consider themselves to be performers or quote unquote actors are performing, and they are acting, and they're being these characters, and they know these characters inside and out. They've read them for years, or they've studied them for years, and they've been fans of these characters for years. So it's easy for someone cosplaying Doctor Who to talk like Doctor Who, because I bet you anything they've seen a few episodes of Doctor Who, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and in fact, it is part of the, you know, again, when you're pretending to be, when you're putting the skin of the bear, you're not just strutting around saying, "Hi, I'm wearing a bear skin." No, you growl and you hunch over and you growl and, you know, come on, yes, you're a bear. You're a bear. You're going to sell it.
I'll tell you guys something. This is my confession to you both, because you both have done amazing costumes in the past, and you've never really seen me dress up. And there's a reason for that, and it is that for the longest time I was very skeptical and dismissive of cosplay. I have my stance on this has changed quite a bit. But when I first started going to conventions, there was usually only one person, maybe two, in costume. And it was almost always a woman who was dressed as some member of the X-Men, usually Dark Phoenix, or sometimes it was somebody in, you know, chainmail or whatever. And there was never... I didn't understand that. It didn't make sense to me. I felt like there was something, my thought was, I'm being me. Why can't you be you? And so I did not get any joy out of this. Then I got into the Elvis aspect of it, you know, and realized that there was something going on the back end rather than just me watching this. You know, a lot of people watch Elvis impersonators ironically and think, oh, he's so bad, he's good. I watch Elvis impersonators and go, that's Elvis. And that's when it's sort of like dialed in for me.
Yeah.
That the people that are doing this they're invoking an aspect, right? In that sort of medieval sense. It's akin to the Commedia dell'arte. Archetypes where, you know, you have certain masks that you wear to become the lovers or the brother and the sister, mm-hmm. or you see what I'm saying?
And so
right about in the mid to late 90s, I started playing along and it started having a ball with it. Never dressing up myself, because honestly, who am I going to be? Owlman? I
got some suggestions for you, sir, but I'll tell you later.
Well, I know everybody said you could do Kingpin. You could totally do Kingpin.
You could.
Or I could do Vic from The Shield. I was at an Austin convention several years ago and saw a note perfect Captain Jack Sparrow. I mean, the guy looked like Johnny Depp and said, well, I've got to take this as far as I can.
Yeah.
And he was kind of doing the stagger. Mm-hmm. And as he walked by me, I flipped him a salute and said, Captain. And without missing a beat, he went, as you were, and kept mm-hmm. going. And I thought, okay, you get it.
Yeah.
So every time I would see one of the Assassin's Creed people walking around, there's a thing in the Assassin's Creed games. The motto of the assassins is nothing is true, everything is permitted, and it's an identifier. And so as they would walk by me, I'd lean over and go, nothing is true. And only one in two, about 50% of them would turn around and go, everything is permitted. And I'd go like, okay, you can stay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because if you're going to do it, commit to the bit, you know. Yeah.
Well,
I know that if I walked up to you as Winston while you were being supreme evil, we could do the bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And to me, that is essential.
Props are essential and bits and pieces of the costume that you put together. One of the first cosplays I ever did years and years ago, but I think I was still in high school, and I went to a convention as Two-Face, one of my favorite Batman villain characters. So I actually went to Goodwill and bought two suits, unstitched them right down the center, and had my mom sew them up. So I had a dark blue pinstripe on the left side and a light tannish suit on the other side, and just right down the middle. So perfect Two-Face suit. Did the makeup, lost complete peripheral vision in my left side because I had this horrible gouged out eye looking thing that I had set in there, and the teeth and everything. And to me, the ultimate part of that costume was the fact that I went to the bank with my money and I got all $2 bills. So I literally, in the convention, everywhere I went, if I was buying something, I would pull out this roll of $2 bills. And that's
perfect.
And even if no one noticed it, for me, I was like, of course he would pay in $2 bills. Why would he? Right?
Yeah, I did a two-face as well. This was around the time that the Batman movie had come out with Two-Face in it. And same thing, Joseph, same thing. We went to a Goodwill. I bought just a normal-looking gray suit, a business suit. And then we found, because it's easy to find this sort of stuff at Goodwill, this rayon wild red costume, you know, like a something you'd wear at a discotheque. Yeah. And slid them right down the middle, stitched them together. I had a friend of mine do the makeup on the Two-Face side, and it was brilliant. It was so freaking awesome. And everybody wanted, we went down to 6th Street, walking down 6th Street, and everybody wanted for me to pose with them while I'm flipping my coin. That's right. Everybody asked, can you flip your coin? I'm like, sure. Okay, I'll flip my coin. Because of course I had a coin. I mean, because of my love of dressing up for Halloween, and because of the fact that as soon as I was able, not quite as early as Joseph, I think Joseph just had this in him, but not quite as early as that, where I stopped buying you'd go to the Kroger and you'd buy that cheap plastic mask with that onesie that you would wear for the Halloween costumes. God, I hated those things. You know, soon after I was like, no, those suck. I mean, I want to be Iron Man, but you know, or Batman, but not like that.
Right.
That's when I started like, okay, well, I can do Dracula, right? I can buy a suit that fits a kid and get a cape and paint my face white. I can do the Wolfman and you know, paint up my face, and you know, so that's it. Became then what is the character that I can reasonably at my kid budget of whatever when I was 10 make a costume for, so I didn't have to wear those horrible things. You know, what can I wear? What can I do? And I think now, I mean, good Lord, the resources for cosplayers, you go on YouTube and you type in cosplay tutorial and you will get hundreds and hundreds of videos, that show you how to do everything you could ever possibly imagine. Foam is their clay. And
that is my favorite thing to play in, is craft foam. It is
amazing ubiquitous. What you can do with that. I've seen what you do with it, Joseph, and it's astounding.
It is so easy to work with. It really is, and it is hands-on. It's very cathartic. It's almost like building a model kit or, you know, piecing together a puzzle, trying to figure out the pieces. I did Loki years ago, and the helmet and the armor and all the pieces are all craft foam, and it's so light and pliable and easy. I mean, the helmet with the horns, which is still to this day being utilized for the yearly Krampus decoration. It's the horns on the Krampus is my old Loki helmet. Nice. That thing lasted. I mean, I gave it multiple layers of white glue water mixture, so it's nice and sealed, and it holds paint brilliantly. But that craft foam stuff, I swear, that's currently my craft foam project. My wife is going as Asa, the vampire, Barbara Steele's character from Black Sunday. And while she's doing the very simple skeleton upper rib cage body with the cape and making her face up, we wanted to bring her to have her a mask of Satan. If you've seen Black Sunday, it's hammered onto her face at the beginning of the movie. So I made a mask of Satan with craft foam, and it came out really, really good. It's just so easy to work with, and she's going to be able to attach it to her purse, basically, and walk around with this mask of Satan under her arm. It is. You know, and it comes in different thicknesses, and you could heat it and mold it and cool it, and it's wonderful, wonderful stuff.
There's an individual who I should have written his name down for the show, but what he does is people will write in or comment in. He has a YouTube channel, and he's a crafter, and they say, okay, make Thor's hammer, make you know, this prop, make that prop, and he makes it entirely out of foam, and he made the new Mjolnir from the Infinity War.
Oh, Stormbreaker.
And it looks Stormbreaker, right?
Stormbreaker.
Yeah. And it looks beautiful. It's all foam and cord. And it's just the way he does it is astounding to watch. It's the most amazing things to see brought to life, because as it's piecing together, you're looking at that going, that's never going to look like the actual Stormbreaker. Give me a break. It's a bunch of pieces of foam that you've glued together.
Yeah.
And then the finished product is like, holy cow. It looks just like the prop. So I love that aspect of it too, is that, fans who are creative and do need an outlet. They want to do something because sadly, more and more, of course, as our society trundles forward, people, it's hard to get a creative job. It's hard to get a career, where you're actually crafting something. You know, most of these people either work in like, IT computer departments, or they're, accountants, or they're, salespeople, or whatever it is. And the only opportunity they have to show their creativity, to stretch those muscles, is to do something like this until, as Joseph pointed out, they can do it for a living. They can actually either get a YouTube channel, and so they get hits and get money that way, or they do tutorials, or they teach people, whatever it is, they actually can make money doing cosplay. Yeah. The art has become so incredibly sophisticated from my days of, if I get this black cape and put on some white makeup.
Right.
No, they're looking fantastic. And by the way, so as far as known people that look like characters, I do want to mention a shout out to an absolutely brilliant cosplayer. As far as I can tell, he only does one character, but his face, he looked in the mirror one day and said, wow, you know what? I look like the Joker. and the gentleman's name is Anthony Misiano, and he's known as Harley's Joker. And if you YouTube him, folks, if you Google him, Harley's Joker, you will see a man who not a stitch of prosthetics on him. He's got makeup. But that is all him. That is his face. That smile, those arched eyebrows. That is him. That is what he looks like. And he is the best, hands down, the best Joker I have ever seen.
Yeah. See, I've seen him before. He does just accentuate the existing that he's got. I mean, the shadows and the makeup that he does wear brings out his cheekbones and his smile, his lips and his teeth, and he looks
like Conrad Veidt, in other words.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's astounding. I mean, you'll see his face. Like, he'll be looking around, kind of like sometimes the Joker will frown, and he's walking around with a frown, and then he sees something that he likes or that interests him, and cracks that smile, and you're like, that cannot be real. But it is. Yeah. It's him just stretching his own face into, it's almost like Jim Carrey-esque in the ability that he has. He also looks a lot like Nikola Tesla, and he did a short appearance as Nikola Tesla for a documentary, and he looks amazing. He looks fantastic. I'm a big fan of Anthony Misiano, but I love when people, Mark, you pointed something out, and this is something that I think is another thing that cosplay is sort of allowing people, breaking some barriers and allowing people to do. A lot of people will look at their face, body type, whatever, and they say, well, I can only cosplay as, whatever it is, Kingpin or Voltan or whatever it is. But more and more we are seeing, especially with young women, who say, I'm going to be Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And this young woman might be African-American and a little on the heavier side. And she does the costume and she dresses as Wonder Woman. And she looks beautiful and amazing, even though that's not really the body type. That is not somebody that you would look at and say, oh, that girl should cosplay as Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Or slave Leias. There's so many slave Leias out there in various different shapes, sizes, ethnicities. There's slave Leias that are that you would never imagine this woman to put this tiny little, tiny, tiny, tiny little costume on. But she does glow. That's the costume. That's the trick of the costume. You could say, I don't look like that guy, but by God, I'm going to put this on and I'm going to be that guy, and you walk into a room with that level of confidence to be able to do that, oh my God, hats off. I am amazed sometimes at some of the characters that I see, and you know this person did this, and with the knowledge that they looked themselves in the mirror and they went, I look nothing like them, but I feel like them.
That's where the magic comes in. That's exactly what Mark was talking about. Mm-hmm. They now have become to embody that character. And so that's what sells it. They may not look like this character, but they have so become that character that you're like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah.
That is convincing to me. Because they really just are, they're strutting around and they are that character. Now that this said, and I think I also need to mention this, I would be happy if I never, ever, ever, ever saw another Deadpool cosplay ever again, ever. No Deadpool dressed as a baby, no Deadpool dressed as a plumber, no Deadpool with a funny hat, no Deadpool with horn. No. I wish Deadpool were from now on banned as a character that you could ever cosplay as.
I'm curious. So, any particular reason?
Because they're everywhere.
It's ubiquitous. Okay.
Yes, they're everywhere. I mean, like, we get it. Or maybe limited to, like, one Deadpool per convention.
I like your spirit, and I'll allow one caveat on this.
Okay. All right.
Everybody gets to do it once.
Okay. Okay. I like that.
Because for a lot of people, that's a starter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an easy costume to pull off. You just need like red tights and a black mask and some gear over your tights. So I think it's a starter. I think if you want to continue to be Deadpool, you have to take a humor quiz. and if you can't be at least as funny or as quick-witted as Ryan Reynolds, then you've got to switch to Spider-Man or Batman or someone else.
Yeah.
That's truly the problem with and again, I would never want to impose my strictures of cosplay on someone else, especially since I don't actively participate in the hobby. However, as a spectator, as an observer of cosplay, I feel that the best cosplay is the cosplay where even if you're doing an original character that you created, you be that character. Mm-hmm. And a lot of amateurs are amazing. Seamstresses or fabricators, but they're not necessarily good actors. And I think that's okay too. I think sometimes your costume can speak for itself. That said, if you're Batman, you better have the voice. If you're Deadpool, you better be fast, quippy, and funny. If you're Captain Jack Sparrow, you better stagger and have that sort of sled to your voice. You know, you got to do certain things if you're going to sell it. And this is where I'm at now at this point, I really like a good cosplay, especially one where the person is being, where they're channeling Elvis, so to speak. Because while I'm not so interested in meeting new people at a convention, I have enough friends to last a lifetime. It's not every day that I get to meet Elvis. Right. and so I'd much rather go up and meet Elvis and have him say, thank you very much. Then go, oh, do you like it? I made this out of Warbler. You know what Warbler is, don't you? No. I don't want to know what Warbler is. Don't tell me anything about your foam. Just say thank you very much and offer us a pound dog, right. Damn it.
Yeah. And by the way, I just realized it also allows one other thing is that Although they are acknowledged at award shows, but it allows you to further celebrate the creativity of the artists who create those costumes, whether they be for a comic book character, an artist, or whether they be a costumer for a film, whatever it is, you are not only celebrating the character and whoever the actor is that is embodying that character. You are celebrating the art of the many artists sometimes who go into the look, the creation of the actual outfit.
Oh yeah. No doubt, and I love that.
I want artists like that to get more recognition. You know, something I discovered in my quick research on this last night. But did you know that some of the first cosplay masks that were worn. They were worn by Forrest Ackerman. That's one of the things that he was known for.
Yep.
He would wear costumes to a convention, at least early
made
on.
By, stop. Made by
none other than,
yes,
our favorite and yours, Ray Harryhausen.
Yep.
Actually created the masks. Mm-hmm. That were worn. And I'm like, wow, could you imagine being the guy that could say, I wore a mask that was created by Ray Harryhausen, not designed by an I did it. No, the man created it. The man did it.
Imagine, if you will, and this is the original Hollywood Bat Pack, as we'd like to call them, Ray and Forey. That's Ray Harryhausen, Ray Bradbury, and Forrest Ackerman hanging out together, because they did. And just having a hoot of a time wearing costumes and going out and just having a ball. Yeah. Those three, I tell you, some of the stories about them, you know, and imagine that level of creativity and that level of magic all in one explosive package, you know. Good heavens. What I'm surprised the universe didn't stop, you know, just to, when you consider everything that those people are responsible for and had done or have done. And their lives. It's stunning. The costuming is, for me, it's a great pleasure. And it is, I get obsessive. Again, I ask my wife, I do get very, very detailed. To me, the detail, the devil's in the details. And I'm very, very strict about, oh no, see, that's not the right ribbon. I got to have a better ribbon, or I got to have something closer. Or yeah, I can dress up. Oh, by the way, Mark Finn.
Yes.
I want to dress you up as Leatherface. I really, really do.
Oh, you'd be a good Leatherface, Mark.
I really do.
Yeah, now,
that's I say that because there's horror conventions that I used to go to all the time when I was doing Griffin and Fangoria stuff. And some of these characters, you know, you see them, you're like, oh, there's Jason Voorhees, and there's Leatherface, there's Pinhead, there's a lot of Freddy Krueger's and Michael Myers. But in the movies, you know, you get an idea of what they're supposed to physically look like. And we talked about the physical differences, and that's fine. I myself have a very, very good Jason Voorhees costume. I'm not big enough, tall enough, wide enough to be an effective Jason Voorhees. I will pad myself up and put lifts on and have a good time, but it still doesn't feel right. My brother James is a perfect Jason Voorhees. He's got the build. He's wide. He's got the arms and the shoulders, and he's taller than me. I'm like, I want to dress you up as Jason Voorhees and watch you in action, because that'll please my heart. You know,
so that's good. Yeah,
there's a level of, hey, I can make this for you, Harryhausen did for Forey. Let me make this for you. Put it on and let me sit back and watch my creation go. Because that's fun as well. And it's almost like being in a movie and designing a costume and putting it on someone. I did a film called The Magnificent Dead, and we did a series of – they were all like leprous vampires. And I designed them all. I sketched them all out, and I designed their characters, and we worked on the costumes, and we put it all together in the makeup, and we had a department doing all that for us. But it was a thrill beyond words to walk on set on the first day that The Magnificent Dead were gathered together as a group in full costume and stand there and go, my vision came to life. Oh my God. Look at them. There they are. They look exactly right. You know, it's a thrill beyond words. And that's the idea for me in costuming and the preciseness of some of this stuff and going, that's not right. I need to find it better. I'll buy this. No, that's not right. I need to make this. No, I'm just going to make this. I remember standing on the roof of my friend Lisa's house, putting together a large Krampus for Christmas. It's a seven foot tall Krampus decoration that sits on top of her house. And my son is up there with me, and we're rigging it together and we're positioning it. And my wife's down on the ground looking up, and she's like, honey, be careful. Oh, watch out. Don't. Okay, look, it's fine. It's good enough. And my son looked at my wife and said, have you met him? It's not good enough.
Good enough, schmuff.
Yeah, no. And part of it, again, and although I think people should and can, you know, cosplay whatever they want, I do love the challenge of, you know, as I've aged, I when I was young, I would cosplay as you know, vampires and D'Artagnan and, you know, the Valmont from Dangerous Liaisons and people like that. You know, as I grew older and wider, the challenge for me was, all right, now who can I cosplay? Well, I can cosplay Voltan. I kind of look like Voltan now. Or
amazing
I can cosplay
Voltan,
Odin.
Yeah, so good.
I can cosplay, you know, and so, but I love that. That becomes then a challenge for me, again, people can cosplay whatever they want. It doesn't matter your body type. I encourage that. But for me, the challenge became who can I better convincingly cosplay as? As that's I've right. gotten older, that's, as I my right. body has changed, I want to be able to find somebody that I still, and I think we will, I want to convince Joseph to team cosplay with me one Halloween where we do Cain and Abel from the DC.
How, oh, that's yeah.
Awesome.
Because,
yes.
oh, so my good. God. Because I think Joseph would look brilliant with the guy with the glasses and the hair like Wolverine up.
Yeah,
he'd
yeah.
be a beautiful Cain. And oh. I look like Abel.
Yes.
yes.
We could do it.
I will absolutely do this with you if you promise me that one year we can do Uncle Creepy and Cousin Eerie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's that kind of stuff, right? It's that kind of stuff. When we realized, yeah. when I said, hey, I want to be Voltan,
yeah.
You know, my family always commits to this. It's beautiful. It wasn't just, well, I'm going to be Voltan for Halloween. No, we're now the Royal Hawkman family. And so Blythe was my queen. My daughter was my young daughter with that had the red wings in Flash Gordon. And so it's like, so we were now the royal family from Hawk City. And we looked great. We strutted around the streets and people stopped us and took picture after picture. And again, the joy, right? When you're walking around and somebody points and says, oh my God, it's Voltan. You know, it's that kind of thing. Like, yay, someone recognized me. And they'd come running over. And of course I would do the, you know, oh yes, I'm so pleased. And that kind of voice. And they'd all gather around and take pictures and shake my hand and, you know, that kind of thing. So that joy that it gives them, that you feel yeah. when somebody is saying, oh, please let me pose with you and take a picture. And I'm like, of course. It's wonderful.
That's the thing. Oh, I just remember the name of the book. Hold on. Let me make sure I got this right. I believe it's called The Death and Resurrection Show. And it basically was, it was sort of talking about this notion of celebrity. And how, in the absence, as our culture has become more secular, we worship different gods, mm-hmm. and part of Elvis impersonation in this case is no different than dressing up as the god of fortune and doing the dance before your troops go into battle, mm-hmm. But that is absolutely. I part of that joy is a very unconscious need to experience and be closer to the thing that we like, you know. Yeah. It's fascinating, and it's why when Elvis impersonators are performing, women throw panties. It's why.
Right.
Well, I mean, they do, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
We all know, you know, what that is, but we still do it, you know, and yeah. that's what's,
no, and I'm glad you brought it. You brought it to that level, Mark, because that's kind of where I wanted to go with this is that
the panty throwing level.
No. but before that, although we'll talk about the panty throwing later, but, you know, you've taken it to that wonderful Neil Gaiman American Gods level. Yes. This is, I think what is the root of, it's in us. It's the reason why we have religion. It's the reason why we have these iconic heroes that translate from one generation to the next, from one century to the next. That's exactly what cosplay is. Cosplay allows us to still say, I'm going to honor Zeus. I'm going to honor Dionysus. I'm going to honor Thor. I'm going to honor Frigga. And I'm going to dress as and evoke the spirit of these entities.
Yes.
And there's something about that I think we find incredibly comforting and soothing and empowering. If you're dressing up like Thor, well, my God, you're Thor. You are the God of Thunder. And so it's a way of psyching ourselves up. It's a way of making us feel better as a group, as a society, as a culture. And so these trappings of society are incredibly important, and we cling to them.
Yeah.
We can see it to some extent in sporting events, when people go to sporting events and they dress they spray paint their bodies in the color of the team and wear the funny hats. And, you know, that's what they're doing. Yes. They're trying to embody. Atomism.
Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I love that aspect of cosplay. It has hit it from the nerd angle, which we all love to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it is now forefront. I mean, you see cosplay everywhere you look now, as far as like, when they're talking about a convention, especially Comic-Con, that's become so huge.
Yes.
And you get all these celebrities going there, and they announced all the big movies that are coming out in that next year. And even now, celebrities themselves will go and cosplay to sort of hide their identity.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
They run around. You know, Mark Hamill ran around as a stormtrooper. And everyone's like, oh, man, can I pose with you? And he's like, sure. And he's a stormtrooper, but it's Mark Hamill. Awesome. Many of them do that. So I love that. I love everything about cosplay.
I think that the proof is in the pudding. I think back often on that Comic-Con Hall H situation where they faked the power going out. And then the lights come back on and Tom Hiddleston standing there mm-hmm. as Loki.
In costume and character.
And, yeah. And the crowd nice. Lost their mind. I mean, there might as well have been Beatles in the room. They flipped so out. And he admits there was something really powerful about that. You know, he puts his hands out and says, say my name. Yes. And he's totally Loki at that point. There's no, it's not Tom in costume. As far as everyone else is concerned, that was the trickster god. Boy, that's powerful. Yeah. I think we have a real innate need as people to believe in things that are greater than us. And I have to, you gave a shout out earlier. I'm going to do one as well. My friend Brian Danner is a stuntman in LA, and he's worked on a bunch of really cool things, TV shows, commercials, and movies. But he's got a side business in addition to his stuntman stuff called Best Birthday Party Ever, or Best mm-hmm. Party Ever. And what it is he and all of his fit creative stuntmen friends and actors and actresses that he knows, they'll come to your kid's birthday party as the Avengers. And not just as the Avengers, because these guys have got costumes that are, you know, straight from the prop departments and the back lots. And so they dress as, you know, you can get X-Men, or you can get DC heroes, or you can get Avengers. Mm-hmm. And Brian's Ant-Man costume is straight out of the first movie. I mean, helmet and everything, the details are incredible. And, yes. and he doesn't just bring it. It's not just Ant-Man. It's seven or eight of these people all walking around in character, in costume, not breaking, you know? It's the kind of thing where you look at the kids and the kids are just stunned. You know, it's one thing to see a guy dressed as Spider-Man. It's another thing to see Spider-Man hanging out with all of his buddies in Avengers.
Right.
And that sense of, you know, for kids, that's a very fluid thing. You know, reality shifts constantly. You know, one minute you're in the living room and the next minute the floor is lava. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that saves you is getting on the couch, because the couch is lava proof. Right. And we that's a wonderful thing that we lose as adults.
Right.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. It's, you know, that willing suspension and disbelief. We hold it back and we reserve it for books and movies. But I think the more that we can access that stuff in the real world and apply it to the everyday, that's why I like smart mobs. You know, that's why I love magic. That's why I love all that stuff, because I love a reminder that we're not in control. And I love a reminder that we have mysteries. And I love reminders that the veil of imagination is not far from us at all. And at any time. And all we have to do is just look. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine what a world we would live in if we didn't have that? You know, I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to live in that world.
That's right. Not at all.
It's the humdrum.
Because it's 1950s Russia. And if you want that, go back to Russia.
Right. Right. Well, right. I want that. I want that magic and that everyday spectacular life that one can have by just putting on a costume and doing something like that and being somebody else.
And by the way, so one other element that I absolutely adore about cosplay is the cross contamination, right? So you are not limited. If you want to be a different version of Captain America, if you want to be Black Captain America, if you want to be, you know, a Muslim version of whatever character, if you want to be, they have a thing called crossplay now, where you do the opposite gender. You do a female Superman, of course. Yes, that's Supergirl, but you know, you're Superman with the same character, but you are now a woman. You are now a man if you are a female, whatever. I mean, you don't see that as much, but still, it happens. And
my favorite version of that is the Captain America World War II era dressed as women. Yeah. When the women dress like the female Captain Americas, and they do the 40s hairstyle, and sometimes they do the pinup girl kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that is the best thing ever.
Yeah. And I love that starts to also make people think outside of some of the bubbles, unfortunately, that we sometimes find ourselves in, where why not have a Black Superman? Why not have a Black James Bond? Why not have a woman Doctor Who? I can promise you, women have been dressing up as Doctor Who decades before the BBC said, you know we should probably have a female Doctor Who.
Why not?
Right. Yeah. And it became reality. Now there is a female Doctor Who. It's official. That's one time where maybe the fandom very much influenced the source, the show.
Oh, yes.
So I love the gender bending that's done. I love the cross-cultural things that are done with these characters, because again, it's not so much like I just want to, although again, some people do, and that's fine. I want to duplicate this character perfectly, exactly down to every little detail. That's fine. It could be more like, I want to be this character, but what if,
you know, if they were Borged?
Right.
You know,
And you get a lot of a blending of genre. So you get a steampunk version of Spider-Man. You get a steampunk version of Iron Man. You get an Old West version of Green Lantern, you know, whatever it is. I mean, just the creativity that goes into it. And again, yes, the magic. We cannot ever lose that, folks, as a culture. We cannot ever lose our creativity, our imagination, the desire to, the wish to look up and want something better, bigger, more imaginative. It's crucial. It's crucial to us continuing forward in my opinion, as a successful species. We will wipe each other out when we stop dreaming. And I hope that we never stop doing that, because that's what makes this race even worth considering.
Yes.
It's all the beautiful stuff that we
And ladies and gentlemen, it's just as simple as putting on a mask, and that's yours. It's yours and yours alone. You can bring that out. You can live it, share it, dwell in it. I do want to mention that because we like this kind of stuff, and Aaron, I invite you to do the same. We're going to be posting some photographs on our Lobot Lounge Facebook page of some of the costumes that we've done in the past, those. I think it's since we've talked about them, and some of the ones that I'm particularly proud of or had a lot of fun doing, include Clytus from Flash Gordon, and I've done the Penguin from 66 Batman, which is a hoot. Oh my God, he was so much fun. Of course, Loki, John Zacherly, horror host, Captain Cold. He was an asshole. He was. Len Snart is an asshole. Evil from Time Bandits is Hades, Greek mythology Hades, Leatherface, Jason Voorhees, The Collector, Mr. Hyde, Negan. The list goes on and on, but these are costumes that I've had so much fun doing because of the character. You mentioned that earlier, and literally I put the costume on and Joseph's gone. And people who know me go, well, we won't see him until he takes that off, you know,
because
it's hard for me to be me if I look like Negan. You know, I have to be that character.
Especially Negan.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
God love him.
Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that sounds fantastic, Joseph. Yeah. Post as many of your beautiful cosplay
and likewise,
costumes as you can. Yeah, I'm going to start looking for mine. Yeah.
Yeah, and share those online. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our podcast. Maximilian's giving us the red eye. We hope you've enjoyed this. The Gentlemen Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production. It's written by Aaron Diorive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, Joseph Fortinos, and cosplayers everywhere, with additional material provided by good old Don Post and craft stores. Lots and lots of craft stores. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot, he's nameless, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Wooher, who is now serving droids because Maximilian can be very persuasive. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron Diorive. Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. We have hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher Diorive. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open, and always remember to tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. I'm Joseph Fortinos, reminding you all that Red Skull lives. One day, I will cosplay as him.
Nice. No, you should cosplay, man. You'd do a great Red Skull. You would do a very good. Oh my god.
All right, I'm not gonna do you guys any favors, but here it is. It's the Death and Resurrection Show, from Shaman to Superstar.
Oh, good.
It's from 1985. It's by Rogan P. Taylor. Uh-huh. And it is so out of print and terribly expensive. So you might as well, now that I've told it to you, you might as well forget it exists.